Welcome to Globally Speaking, a podcast dedicated to unlocking global understanding. Join us as we engage with experts and innovators who are reshaping the way we connect with global audiences. Whether seeking to refine your approach, wanting to expand your understanding of AI and its role in transcending global communication barriers, or just curious about the intricacies of global content, this podcast promises to enlighten and inspire.
What I'd also like to talk about, because I remember as we were going through this project, I can remember when the editor became accessible to some extent for the very first time, and I can remember your reaction to that. And I was quite moved while I was listening to that and watching what was going on. Can you maybe give us some examples of the really standout moments of progress that we had as we've been working through the accessibility of Charter Studio?
Yeah, I was very excited and moved because, as I mentioned, when I was opening the editor in the past, it was something like a blank page and it was not possible to read anything. In that moment, when for the first time I opened the editor and it was not accessible, because I can't say that it was accessible, but at least I could read the source text. It was something that was really, really nice. I couldn't read the status of the segment or the number, but at least it was possible to read the source text, and yeah, it was really. And in that moment, I thought, okay, we are on the right way. This was really a big step towards.
Yeah, it's been interesting testing the iterative beta builds. Every time we get a new build and we look at something. And I can't always hear what you're listening to on the screen reader. It depends if you've shared the sound or not. And sometimes we'll put a new build on there and you'll go through something and then all I can hear is, wow.
Yes.
Wow, this is really cool. And so there's like lots of hidden things going on in the background, which we don't even know have been implemented and fixed in the software, but they're there and they're really helping you, which is just fantastic.
Yes, because I really know how it was previously and how it is when I'm testing. And sometimes there are some improvements that really make the difference.
While software can be made accessible, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's usable. And for example, if you go somewhere in the software and then find that every time you go to it, you have to press tab 15 times to get back to the same thing. Yes, it's accessible, and with every tab, it's reading everything out to you, but it's not usable because it very quickly becomes painful and irritating to use. And so this is the difference between accessibility and usability, and the two things have to go hand in hand. So from your perspective, how do you think development teams should be engaging with the community to work and validate all these sorts of improvements in the software?
I think that testing with a real user that in this case is a blind user, but it can be said for every disability.
I mean, when we first started looking at Studio, obviously to give Studio to a blind user and ask them to test it at the beginning would have been pointless, because they just wouldn't have been able to know what to do with it, because it wouldn't be giving them any feedback at all. But even as we go through developing the software, there sort of must be a balance point by at which point where we can say, okay, we provided enough accessibility and it's usable enough that now I could give this software to somebody and they could test it and tell me what's missing. How close do you think the current version of Studio that we've been working on, for example, how close is that to being in a state where without any instructions at all, you could give that software to somebody who's completely blind, never used the software before, and ask them to test it?
But I think that this is exactly the same for a sighted person. I think that you can't give the software to a sighted person that have never used it before. Yeah. So it's exactly the same concept. I think that it's not possible that a blind user use the software without knowing what to do and without at least knowing some concepts of the what it travels.
It's clear that it's going to be very key making sure that we've got proper user documentation for blind users that guide them clearly through that software, so it becomes a reasonably straightforward thing to be able to do. Let's talk a little bit about standards, because I know over the years we get inquiries from companies wanting to know if we meet the standard, like WCAG, for example. And often I find that there's a common belief out there that if you can say you're WCAG compliant, you've done everything you need to do, and that's going to be good enough. But from your perspective, is compliance with these standards alone really enough for a blind user?
Compliance with the WCAG is undoubtedly a critical step toward making digital content accessible to users with disabilities, including blind users. Meeting these guidelines is essential, compliance alone often isn't sufficient to ensure a fully accessible and user-friendly experience for blind users. Firstly, it's important to understand that WCAG compliance should be seen as a baseline. WCAG provides a broad framework of accessibility requirements that, when met, ensure content is accessible at a fundamental level. However, real-world use cases can be complex, and blind users often encounter challenges that extend beyond what WCAG addresses. Compliance with these guidelines doesn't necessarily translate into a good user experience. Mm-hmm. For blind users, navigating a website using screen readers or other assistive technologies should be intuitive and efficient. And this is where usability testing with actual blind users become crucial, as I mentioned before. And such testing can uncover issues that mere compliance might not catch, such as poorly structured content, inefficient navigation, ambiguous link text, or overly complex forms. And these usability aspects are vital because they directly impact how easily blind users can interact with and consume web content.
I can totally relate to what you've been saying there. I know even today, actually, this morning, you and I were doing some testing on the pre-production release of Trotter Studio 2024. And while we were doing it, because we were a bit short of time, I tried to shortcut a few things by using the mouse to very quickly get you to a place in the software where we could then test from that point. And it was interesting that when I did that, it changed the behavior of the software. So you could no longer reproduce issues that you had when you're just using the keyboard. So even interacting and breaking up the way a blind person would use the software to try and speed things up can result in not finding out what the real problems are. So you definitely have to have a blind person doing this stuff, and they need to be given the space to do it as they work, using the keyboards, not taking any shortcuts, because the experience can change for the most bizarre reasons, and you don't know unless you test it properly.
Yeah, and I wanted also to add that blind users interact with web content in a varied ways that can reveal accessibility gaps not covered by the WCAG, as you were also mentioning now. And for instance, dynamic content changes, multimedia elements, and complex interactive features might pose unique challenges. And WCAG provides guidelines for these elements, but the real world, let's say, application can expose nuances that require more tailored solutions. And another significant aspect is the compatibility with a range of assistive technologies. Different screen readers like JAWS, NVDA, or VoiceOver may interpret the same content differently.
Yeah.
Ensuring that content works seamlessly across all these tools is essential. And WCAG compliance alone doesn't guarantee this compatibility. Each tool has its own quirks, and interpreting them uniformly across different technology often requires additional efforts beyond what the guidelines specify. The needs of blind users can also be highly context specific. For example, a website designed for booking travel might require additional accessibility features beyond WCAG to ensure users can effectively compare and select travel options. And these specific scenarios demand a deeper understanding of the user journey and potential obstacles that blind users might face.
So now that we have WCAG 2.2 since October last year, and we also have the European Accessibility Act, which is just around the corner, do you think these updates will be game changers in making sure that digital spaces are going to be more accessible and usable for everyone?
The release of the WCAG 2.2 with the European Act, Accessibility Act, marks, of course, significant progress in the effort to make digital spaces more navigable and usable for everyone. This update reflects an evolving understanding of accessibility needs and the growing commitment to creating inclusive digital environments. However, whether they will be game changers depends on several factors. WCAG 2.2 introduces new success criteria aimed at addressing gaps and enhancing accessibility. And these updates are designed to provide more comprehensive guidance on making web content accessible to people with a range of disabilities. For instance, they include new guidelines on ensuring visible focus indicators, which are crucial for keyboard navigation, and new requirements for more accessible authentication processes. Such enhancements are certainly beneficial and can significantly improve usability for individuals who rely on assistive technologies. The European Accessibility Act, set to come into force soon, represents another critical advancement. In fact, this act mandates that a wide array of products and services must be accessible to people with disabilities, encompassing everything from e-commerce to banking and transportation services. And this legislation not only underscores the importance of accessibility, but also imposes legal obligation on business and services providers to comply. So the DAC's broad scope and enforceable nature are likely to drive substantial improvements in accessibility across various sectors. I think that together the WCAG 2.2 and the EAA create a stronger framework for accessibility, encouraging organizations to prioritize inclusivity in their digital offerings. By testing clear standards and legal requirements, they help ensure that accessibility is not just an afterthought, but an integral part of the design and the development process.
Yeah, well, I think anything for me, what I think they've really set out there, and it's not just about websites, it's also about software that you use on your desktop machine. But the key thing there is the requirement for providing proper support and services, because this is where it gets interesting. So when somebody buys a product from you, it's not enough it's not enough that that digital product, the software, is accessible and usable, which is what it will have to be. But also, when they come to buy it, what's the process like when they bought it? Was it easy? Was everything accessible to them? If they get stuck,
and the support.
I was just going to say, if they get stuck and they need help, and they go to the support team, are the support team able to help a blind person or another kind of disabled person with what they're doing? So I think these are definitely wide ranging changes, and really important, because I think it will, to some extent, prevent people hanging their hat on their, yes, we're WCAG compliant or something like that, and leaving it at that, because it just isn't going to be enough. I feel as though these are definitely wide ranging changes, which really people need to be thinking long and hard about to make sure that they're ready for it.
Yeah, another aspect is that people have to be trained to assist people Correct. With a disability. Yeah. Because, for example, if to a blind user you say, okay, click on the right corner of the screen, or click on your image, this is not the right way to assist a blind user. There is a lot of work. And maybe people even think to these aspects, but not yeah. because, but they, of course, it's not always obvious.
So do you think that the accessibility of processes like this, when you onboard a new employee, plays a significant part in a company making a decision on whether or not they hire somebody who's blind?
Yeah, I honestly think that not every organization is ready and willing to hire a blind person. Because, yeah, maybe they are scared, they don't know what to do. And of course, if there is a lack of accessibility, of course, they prefer not to employ this person instead of making websites and softwares accessible, because it requires require money, resources, time consuming, and yeah.
Many years ago, I spent a little bit of time working with some blind children at the Royal National Institute for the Blind in Worcester. But despite all of that, I really, really did not appreciate how difficult it could be for somebody to do the things that we just take for granted and we work every day and we just move on with them. And I never really appreciated how much additional time and care and attention you need to take to everything you work on. So I can definitely see how any company who wasn't prepared for it but understood the difficulties, how that could influence their decision on whether they recruited someone or not. So
yeah. And if I may come back just a little to the previous question, I wanted also to mention, for example, the support assistance, the technical support, because it's something I think very important, because as I work remotely, if there is some issue, I don't have anyone next to me to help me. So many times I have to face some challenges. And for example, also with you, Paul, we were making video calls with our phones. You were guiding me how to please more on the right, more on the left, higher, lower.
Yeah.
It was something very enjoyable, very it was amazing, because it shows that it can be possible, and
it can be possible with
technology.
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah.
I really want to thank you, RWS, to have gave me this opportunity, because it was not something, it was not granted. It's not something that every company would have done. So,
no, I agree.
I really appreciate it.
Yeah. It actually, I mean, I've been here nearly 20 years now, but I'd have to say one of the proudest things that has happened since I've been here was when RWS, in conjunction with the RWS Foundation, it's really the RWS Foundation who helped us to kick this off and to make this happen. I was really proud to belong to an organization that was able to put the effort in to try to do something like this. I mean, how do you think that involvement of the RWS Foundation has helped to lift the cause of accessibility within the translation community?
Yes, of course, the RWS Foundation was the first that we have to thank to have made possible this project. We'll also involve other blind translators because they will also test the Trados studio. So, they were really helpful in, because I was doing a 9-month project with them, with the help of the RWS Foundation, and then when this project came to an end, I was hired by RWS.
One of the things we've discussed is, as we've been trying to identify blind translators, that's actually been a mission in itself. It's amazing how privacy laws and things like that have made it incredibly difficult to be able to identify whether people are blind or not and keep records of it and all that kind of stuff. But outside of that, one of the things that has struck me is while you've been working with us to identify more and more blind translators, it's interesting just, or sad in a way, just how many people who were enthusiastic, but blind students who are enthusiastic to pursue a career in translation. And when you talk to them now and we can say to them, okay, we've got an accessible version of Studio that's enough for you to start working with. Do you want to engage in the journey? And it's sad in a way just how many have given up on those aspirations and have moved into other careers despite the fact of what they wanted to do. So I'm curious, now that we've come this far with the project, what are your feelings on the progress and the ripple effects it might have on the translation community going forward?
When the software will really be accessible, I think that there will be more and more blind users using it and asking to use Trados, and even, for example, making some webinars, videos on how to use it, because, of course, they are unconfident, let's say. Making it accessible, people will be really appreciating the effort. And
yeah, it's definitely been a very worthwhile project. I'm really happy and proud to have been involved with it. So that's a really positive thing.
Sorry, and another thing that I want to say that is that a person can't really see and understand the improvements if he or she is not involved in the project. Because, for example, I can give you an example. The creation project Wizard was completely not usable, was not accessible and not usable, at the very beginning. For example, it was not possible to go from a step to another, to move, to navigate from a step to another. But now this project Wizard, although has some issues, because we can't say that it's completely usable and accessible. Yeah, it's accessible, but not completely usable, because, of course, you were mentioning before, Paul, about the tab navigation. Mm-hmm. But, for example, if a blind user see this wizard now, he or she will say, oh, it's completely unusable. It's completely, it's not good. But if you are involved in the project like me, like I am, you can really see the improvements and the efforts. I don't know if I'm clear enough.
You definitely are. It's the same as anything, I think. If you're faced with something for the first time and it's full of challenges, or what you perceive as challenges, you're going to find it difficult and you might decide not to use it. Whereas if you've been involved with it for a long time, where it's been a real struggle all the time, and now you're given a version of it that is significantly improved, you're going to love it. And so two people can have completely different perceptions of the same software, dependent on their experience and involvement with
it. Yeah, even though it's not still perfect, I really prefer to be annoyed by navigating by tab, but at least to be able to do it.
To be able to do it, yeah. Yes. We've definitely come a long way, and I'm really looking forward to getting this first build of Trados Studio 2024 out into the public domain. With the product team, I think, have done a really good job. I think they've been able to satisfy the requirements of this initial build proposal that we put together, that we set up with the IWS Foundation. I think they've met everything that was asked of them in that proposal. There was a significant amount of work to do under the hood that most people will never even be aware of in order to get Trados Studio even close to being an accessible tool. And over this next year, I think it's just going to go on and on and on, and it won't be long before we have a fully accessible product. So I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, me too, because I'm really the testimonial of how in 1 year it has been improved.
Yes. So, Anarita, and with that, I just want to say, first of all, I know you were really worried about doing this interview, this podcast in English, but actually you've done a fantastic job. And, so you had nothing to worry about.
Thank you.
It's been really great.
And, thank you.
And as always, it's always a pleasure to talk to you about these sorts of things. I think your insights have been really valuable, and your role in pushing the accessibility agenda forward in translation software is really very inspiring for everyone. So thank you so much for sharing your time and thoughts with us today.
Thank you to you very much. Thank you all.